Now, in verse 7, the second step, but made himself of no reputation. Now, if you'll notice here, a better translation of that, the word here, is, and this is where the kenosis theory comes from, is the word kenao, and it means he emptied himself. Now, there's always been a question, what did he empty himself of? And there were those, some of the first heresies had to do that he emptied himself of his deity, that when he came down, the deity came on to him at his baptism and left him at the cross. Well, this makes it very clear here that he emptied himself of something, but he did not empty himself of his deity. He was 100% God when he was a little baby reclining in a helpless position on the bosom of Mary. He was then a little helpless baby, but at that moment, he could have spoken this universe out of existence. Why? Because he's God. And he was 100% God, not 99 and 44 100s percent, but 100%. There never was a moment when he was not God, when he came down yonder to Bethlehem. Now, we're told here that he emptied himself. Now, what did he empty himself of? And I'm convinced he emptied himself of something. Well, I think he emptied himself of the prerogatives of deity. Now, when he came down to Bethlehem, at Christmas time, we make a great deal of the fact that there were the shepherds and the wise men. Of course, they didn't get there a couple years later, but that doesn't seem to bother the Christmas pageants that we have. And there was the angel Gabriel, and there were the heavenly hosts, and my, we think that's just great. Well, friends, I must say, I disagree with that. He's God. Did you know that instead of a few angels, instead of a few shepherds being there, did you know the whole universe should have been there? Every created creature should have been there, because they're going to all bow to him someday. They should have been there. Caesar should have been there. The whole Roman Empire should have been there. Religion should have been there. The temple in Jerusalem should have been empty that day. And they should have come down to Bethlehem because he was born there. But they didn't. And why didn't he force it? Well, he laid aside his prerogatives of deity. He didn't force anything. He was willing to go into that stable there. And we always make it in the Christmas pageants a pretty clean stable. Well, it wasn't. It was a dirty, filthy place. And somebody says, well, it was the same place that the people slept. Well, they were in the adjoining building, I'm sure. But the thing is, it was not very clean where all these animals were. And that's where he was born. And he went up there to Nazareth, a little old miserable town. And he was raised there. And he was a carpenter, unknown, unheard of. And yet, probably, more people have heard of him up to today than any other person except Abraham. He has been a world figure, and he was brought up in that little carpenter shop up there, and he laid aside his prerogatives of deity. He could have had the Shekinah glory with him all the time, but he didn't. They always paint him, you know, with a picture with a halo around his head. He didn't have a halo around his head. Judas, even the night he was arrested, had to come and kiss him so that the soldiers would know who he was. He didn't stand out like that from the others. My friend, this idea today that he went around with a halo and his head in the clouds and looking up all the time is a big mistake. He was a human being. He had taken upon himself that. But he was God manifest in the flesh. And he laid aside those prerogatives. Now, somebody says to me, can you be sure of that? I think I can. Now, when he had finished his ministry, and you remember he was gathered with his own that last night, and in that prayer that last night, he prayed a very wonderful prayer. It is the Lord's Prayer. It's in John 17. Will you listen to him? One thing he said in that prayer was this. Verse 5, "And now, O Father, glorify thou me with thine own self, with the glory which I had with thee from before the world was." Now, you notice that? He says, I want the glory that I had. I want that now restored to me. Apparently, he laid aside his prerogatives of deity, the glory light, and it broke out on several occasions, as you know, and certainly after his resurrection, it was there. But now, he says, as he's going to return to heaven, restore to me the glory that I had with thee. Obviously, he laid that aside, you see. So, he didn't lay aside his deity. He's God of very God, and he's man of very man. The oldest creed of the church says that. And my friend, that's the way it's been down through the ages, and the thinking of men today can't change that one whit. Who being in the form of God, he thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. Now, the third step down. And he took upon him the form of a servant. Now, he came to this earth as a servant. He was a carpenter. I suppose that you lived in Nazareth in that day. You could have gone by and said to him, Jesus, I have some repair work to be done at my house. Doors coming off the hinges. I wonder if you'd come fix it. I think he would have said, I'll be right over. You see, he took upon himself the form of a servant. He could have been born in Caesar's palace. He was a king, but he never made that claim during those early years. Never made it till he rode into Jerusalem in the so-called triumphal entry. But up to that time, why, he took upon him the form of a servant. That's the way he came into this world. You talk about the working man today, the humble man, the little man. That's the way he came into this world. He came not only as a human being, but he came among the majority, where most of us are today, little people. And that's the way he came into this world. He took upon him the form of a servant. He left heaven's glory, and he was God, worshipped as God by the heavenly host. Now he leaves all of that, and he comes to a Christ-rejecting world, where they had him locked out, if you please, not even a place for him to be born. But God arranged a stable, and that was better than that public inn, because all it would have been just one great room where each fellow put down his pallet. And that wouldn't have been a very nice place for Jesus to have been born before that leering crowd. And I think the dumb oxen were lots better than the dumb mob myself. And I still feel that stable became holy ground. All it was just a stable. And we find that he made this tremendous step downward. The prophets said that there would be a root out of Jesse. Isaiah, you'll recall, said that. A root out of Jesse. And I often wondered as a young preacher, well, why didn't Isaiah say a root out of David? Well, I'll tell you why. The reason is that when Jesus was born, Mary, who was in the line of David, and Joseph, who was also in the Davidic line in another route, we find that these two were peasants. That's all they were, just humble peasants, unknown folk, living in that little miserable Gentile town called Nazareth. That's where Jesus was brought up. He took upon him the form of a servant. Not the line of David? Oh, yes. But the interesting thing is, you see, David was anointed a king, but his father was not a king. He was a farmer in Bethlehem, raised sheep, you know. That's what he was. Nothing wrong in that other than he was just not a king. So a root now comes out of Jesse. The line is dropped back to the place of the peasant. And our Lord came as a servant. He took an humble place, you see. Now, notice the fourth step downward. He was made in the likeness of man. Now, friends, that for years did not impress me at all. Because very candidly, I'm a man, and I like being a man. I think there's a dignity about being a human being that's quite wonderful. To be in the likeness of a man. And how can that be humbling? Well, it's very difficult for me today to make it clear to you that the one who's Lord of this universe and the creator of this universe and the one who created man, may I say to you, it was humbling for him to take upon himself the form of a man, to be made in the likeness of man. He was a man down here. He came down not only to redeem mankind, but to reveal God to mankind. How important that was. Because how do we know about God? We don't know a thing unless what he tells us. And when he came down to this earth and became a man, we found out a whole lot about God. And that the only way you can know God is through Jesus Christ, who is God. But he became a man, like the little girl. She went upstairs. Her mother told her to go upstairs and go to bed. And she went upstairs and went to bed and turned out the light. And she began to cry and whimper. And her mother said, "What's the matter?" She says, "I want somebody to come up here and be with me. I don't want to be by myself." And the mother said, "God's up there with you." And for a moment, it was quiet. And then she said, "But, Mama, I want somebody with a face." Well, may I say to you, Jesus Christ is God with a face. And he said this concerning himself. He said, "I am the water of life. I'm the bread of life." Well, I know about bread, and I know about water, and I know about him now. He says, "I'm the door." He not only fixed doors, he was the door. And I know about doors. I got doors in my house. You know about doors. He says, "I'm the true vine." I know a whole lot about vines out here in California. And I know something else. He says, "I am the life, and I'm the way." My, these words, they tell us a great deal about him and about who he is. He came to reveal God. But notice what it says here. He took upon himself the likeness of man. Now, I say it again, I like being a man. And I can't see that that's being humbling. To become a man. It was for him to leave heaven's glory and become a man. Let me give you a very homely illustration that I trust might be helpful in understanding this. And it's a rather ridiculous one, too, but it'll illustrate what we're after. Here in California, the ants are not killed off during the winter time. Fact of the matter is, it doesn't get that cold. And they may not move about as they did before, but they're still with us. And I didn't know that when we first came to California. And it was November. I thought we were through with ants. There wouldn't be any about. And I got up one morning, went into the kitchen. Well, they had opened up one of the first freeways in Southern California to the Sugar Bowl. They were coming down on one side and going back on the other. And I guess they would have taken off all of the sugar. We let them alone. But I got busy and got rid of those ants. And then I found out that they not only made that freeway to the Sugar Bowl, they made it to the sink because they like water to drink too. And my friend, I want to tell you, I had ant trouble. So I began to find out. Well, I'll tell you what we do. I have a very wonderful friend here in Southern California who's in the business killing bugs. He's a bug exterminator. And about once or twice a year, he comes to my place and he sprays all over the place. And I haven't seen an ant around my place in years. Now, I have a notion that down in the ant world, that they've had several protest meetings about me. They Say, that fella lives up in that house. He just doesn't like us. And we don't like the way he does. He's infringing on our liberty. He's destroying us. And they may be marching up and down with a bunch of placards in front of my place right now. I don't know. I haven't noticed, but they may be. And I'm sure they don't have very much use for me because I've really killed them all. No question about that. Now, may I say to you, I really don't hate ants. That's not my hang-up. That's not my problem at all. I just soon let ants live. Now, if I had some way of communicating with those ants and would be able to say to them, look, ants, you stay outside of the house. Just let the sugar bowl alone, stay away from the sink, and I'll put sugar outside for you and water outside. I'd go that far, be willing to do that for them, because I don't hate ants, really. But they don't know that. Now, suppose I could get the message to them. How would I do it? Well, suppose that I could go down and become an ant, become one of them, and communicate to them in ant language and get the word through to them. Now, if I could, I want you to know this, I wouldn't. You know why? Because I know some folk today that if I became an ant, they'd step on me, and I'm not going to become an ant, not going to take that chance. But suppose I could go down there and become an ant, communicate. My friend, that to me would be humbling. May I say to you that for me to go down and become an ant is nothing compared to what the Lord Jesus Christ did when he left heaven's glory and came down to this earth and became a man. It was humbling for him to become a man. And he was made in the likeness of man. How tremendous that is. He became one of us. And it was humbling for him to do that.